He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Why am I playing Sarah Brightman? So why am I playing Sarah Brightman?
Why are you?
She has paid a reported 35 million pounds at $50 million to be the first ever singer to perform live from outer space.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, she's had a hard time following a Phantom of the Opera, I guess. That's a lot of dough. But God bless her. I mean, if I had that kind of money, I would pay. I know some are paying $20 million to go on. I'd go if I had that kind of thing.
What kind of line do they have to wait in to get up there, though?
Right? I don't imagine that there's that big a line when you're paying that kind of money, but who knows? You know, I hate to generalize, ladies and gentlemen, but I was listening to Noam's newscast just now. By the way, good morning. How are you all doing? 8 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo along with Noam. I hate when people generalize, but going back to Noam's newscast about that 36-year-old laser loser, the Post, in its inimical fashion, calls him a laser loser. Perfect. He's a perfect loser, 36-year-old laser loser. And that's why, back to my point about generalization, I find it so repugnant that high-tech millennial generation, obviously not all of them, some are so creative, some are changing the world as we know it, but a good hunk of them are like this guy. They hunker down in their mom's basement. They just kind of muddle through life, and they're just high-tech enough to do stuff like, harass people on the internet or learn how to burn out a pilot's eyes with their lasers. I mean, it is so disheartening. They need an inspiration. I thought it would be Barack Obama. It's not going to be Barack Obama. They need some kind of inspiration. They need a Bob Dylan of their generation. Taylor Swift is the closest one I can think of, but she's actually younger than the loser generation. I want to start this program off with our condolences, obviously, to the families of the crew members aboard that Black Hawk that went down in the Gulf of Mexico off the Florida Panhandle. They're now confirming that they are finding human remains. So the 7 Marines and the 4 soldiers are presumed dead. The crash took place during a training mission. It shows how dangerous that life is. Now, I guess the fog has lifted enough for them to go out into the Gulf, and they're finding human remains. So no hope now for the 11 on board that downed Black Hawk. And as long as I'm in my military mode, I want to celebrate, along with the Iraqis, the apparent liberation of at least a good hunk of the city of Tikrit, which had been held since last August by ISIS. Iraqi soldiers and their allied Shiite militiamen and the Iranian officers directing the offensive have finally entered Tikrit. And I know how, the involvement of the Iranian generals really irks a lot of people. But like I say, better the Iranian generals than ISIS. The Iranian generals aren't cutting off anybody's head or burning anyone alive. So I just want to note that comes as Secretary Kerry and Carter, the new defense secretary, are talking to the Senate today about the authorization of the use of force against ISIS. The president, in his kind of measured, cautious, baby step way, moving to really apply American military power to the final rout of ISIS. It's very necessary. I don't know why he's been so tepid. I don't know why he's been so cautious. And if we don't do the job, the Iranians will definitely do the job. We've got to get ISIS out of Iraq. We've got to get ISIS out of Syria. Now they've spread to Libya. Who knows where else? They're the ones who are the social media experts. They're the ones that could inspire knuckleheads like the laser loser to commit acts of violence against us. You know, I just want the president to kind of wake up and stop this, you know, too cool for school approach. It's a pretty morning here in New York. I'm sure you see as you have awakened and you're off to your day's pursuits. You know, last weekend we set the clocks ahead. It's pre-spring. And as soon as we did that, the weather promptly changed over the weekend for the better. Now the gloom of winter banished by optimism. I'm optimistic. I may not sound it yet, but I am optimistic. And I'm filled with the notion that we've survived another cruel season. And that nagging question of why we don't all live in Florida, I can't shake that one. You ever pondered that?
All the time.
Is that Jewish heaven?
Yeah, it is.
I'm telling you, this was a tough one. And now, you know, we've got rising temperatures, but we're also dealing with those melting piles of snert. And, you know, after I heard Bill Evans say that yesterday, I live in a, you know, the Upper East Side, pretty nice neighborhood, although de Blasio has made a point of not shoveling the snow any quicker there than he does in Bushwick or anyplace else. Now we have these unsavory melanges of snow, dog crap, candy wrappers, generalized urban gunk. Gross reminders that, you know, reminded me of that. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Well, this is the one, you know, the next landmark, I tell you, the Breastwinox, when the ladies shed their heavy winter coats. That's the true spring equinox in the big city. Hillary in a jam, obviously. You've been hearing about it. That's the lead story, obviously, everywhere. You know, this admission by the former Secretary of State, former First Lady, former Senator, that she deleted 30,000 of these emails during her time as Secretary. She remains defiant. I'm sure you've seen the big press conference yesterday. What a crowd. I'll just give you a quick flavor, Crash, just a quick flavor of Hillary at the defensive press conference yesterday.
The vast majority of my work emails went to government employees at their government addresses, which meant they were captured and preserved immediately on the system at the State Department. I feel like once the American public begins to see the emails, they will have an unprecedented insight into a high government official's daily communication. According to the State Department, which recently said Secretary Kerry was the first Secretary of State to rely primarily on a state.gov email account.
All right, that's Hillary explaining. Do you buy the explanation? You know, obviously this kind of evasion has led to charges from the usual hard right Republican suspects that Hillary's covering up. I think the question for the rest of us is, over time, which side we'll find most disagreeable, which side irks us the most, the angry, defensive, chin-jutting, husband-covering Hillary, or, you know, Daryl Issa, Trey Gowdy, that hard right Republican used car salesman hatchet crowd who brought us those nowhere scandals, IRS, Fast and Furious, and, of course, Benghazi. So is this what it's going to be for the next year? And Michael Goodwin, the ace of the New York Post, joins us. Michael, welcome. I'm surprised you didn't lead with Hillary in your column. You went after Mayor Putz, but why not the former secretary?
Yeah, I frankly thought, Geraldo, that there would be too much Hillary in the paper. And, you know, with my, this is kind of inside baseball, but with my full page format, you have to be sort of in the package or out of the package. And so I thought it would be better to give the reader some other options.
Well, how do you feel, though, about Hillary? Do you think it's a big story?
Yes, absolutely. I did a small item on it on my page today. One of the things that, of course, we're all wrestling with is, why did she do this? I mean, she had to know that at some point this issue would come up. I mean, it's not like in 2009 when she set this up that she was new to the politics, new to the press issues. So I think it was very much a choice. And one of my conclusions, Geraldo, is that She was trying to keep it secret. The question is, secret from whom? And my argument is, it was as much the Obama White House that she was worried about as the Republicans in Congress. Don't forget, she and Obama still do not trust each other. I mean, there's a major issue between their camps. You know, he's got his acolytes, she's got her acolytes, Bill Clinton's got his acolytes, and there's still a lot of under-the-radar fighting that goes on. And I think that one of the things that we discovered, when you go back, how much power did she really have at the State Department? Did she get to pick all of her deputies? What about the ambassadors? Obama picked a lot of those people.
Wait, so the headline is Michael Goodwin believes that Hillary Clinton was hiding not from the Republicans or the public, but from the President of the United States?
From both. From the Republicans and the public, but also the President of the United States. I think that having a private email would have made it very much more difficult for the White House or Obama's spies, I use the word in parentheses, in the State Department that he had placed her. Don't forget, all these policies were decided at the White House. They have centralized power. The secretaries of the cabinet have actually very little power. I mean, I think it's one of the little understood things about how Obama has operated. He has centralized everything in the White House. And the White House staff has grown enormously.
Biden, the vice president?
No. I'm thinking Joe Califano, who worked for Lyndon Johnson, said during Johnson's years, there were 50 people in the White House. It's now more than 1,000 on the president's staff.
Wow.
So you have a real centralizing that's gone on there. So I think Hillary was very much worried about just not having any privacy from the White House, not being able to talk to people, get emails, correspond with people, express thoughts without somebody at the White House knowing about it instantly. So a private email with its own server protects her from even Obama.
Does the scandal have legs? Briefly, Mike, I'm out of time. Does the scandal have legs? Will this haunt her, or is it just another background noisy kind of thing?
Well, I think what's happened so far will just haunt her. If there's more about the foundation and its fundraising,
that's a different
quid pro quos.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the foundation is one of the things that's on this email. I think if she's using that email address for foundation work, that may be the stuff that she calls personal that she deleted.
Right, but also that would not be obtainable by the subpoena from the House committee investigating Benghazi. I would give her that legal advice.
You're going to have to get this legally. I don't think there's going to be a leak that's going to get it. You're going to have to get it with a subpoena, and so that's going to be difficult.
So is she going to be the next president?
I don't think so.
Who will be?
Oh, I don't know. If I knew that, Geraldo, we could retire.
I could have led with it. Michael Goodwin of the New York Post, The Ace. Thank you, Michael.
My pleasure.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. So here's the way this is going to go down with Hillary and the private email server. If the Republicans really want more emails than she has offered them, and clearly they do, they'll have to subpoena the server. That's the only way you can get to that information, other than subpoenaing everybody who ever received an email from Hillary, which is impossible to know who they are. So you have to subpoena the server. You've got to get that through the House Select Committee investigating Benghazi, led by Trey Gowdy. You're going to have Daryl Issa and the other hatchet men on the right wing cheering that process on. So you get it through the committee. Then you've got to go through the full Senate. You got to fight it out in the Senate, fight out this subpoena in the Senate. So then the Senate rules that they want this subpoena to be enforced. They want the private email server. But then they have to turn to the Justice Department to implement their declaration. The Senate has no power to seize the machine on its own. They've got to go to the Justice Department. The Justice Department, which is headed right now by Eric Holder, soon to be headed by Loretta Lynch, strong Democrats. The Justice Department is going to do just like the federal judge did against Eric Holder when he was held in contempt of Congress for Fast and Furious. They will do nothing. So you'll see all these hurdles being played at in public between now and next November 2016. So if you like or dislike this whole email flap, get used to it because it's going to be around. So, Rich, what are you thinking about? Rich in White Plains, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling 866-Arello.
Geraldo, I'm thinking you're an enigma. You got it right this time. You got really to the heart of the issue, which I think that your colleague at Fox News, Judge Napolitano, he brings such clarity to everything. And yes, the server is at the heart of the issue. She skirted the law by not opening a .gov account and having a third party have access to her emails. And that is what is at the heart of this issue. You know, when she says, I'm going to turn over, well, that says you. Where's the verification? Okay?
I agree, but do you agree with me that finding the truth absent absolute 100% voluntary compliance will be problematic?
They can't make it seems like, yes, Geraldo.
Yes, thank you. All right, we got to it, Rich. We got to it. And Carlos, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling.
Hey, Geraldo, I love the show. You know that.
Aaron Glare, thank you.
I I'm so disappointed in this whole email thing and the decision that Hillary decided to do this because it just gives them red meat, something that we don't need. Listen, I am Clinton exhausted. I wish we had somebody.
Get used to it, bud.
Yeah, I know. But I love the fact that, you know, Trey Bowdy, who has nothing better else to do than to go after Benghazi. Can you imagine that the American people actually thinks that we wanted our guys to die over there in Benghazi, that we did nothing?
Stupid. But, I mean, just imagine. Ladies and gentlemen, Carlos, thanks for the call. I imagine you got Trey Gowdy, Daryl Issa, and Hillary Clinton. They could make a great singing group, wouldn't it?
Rollo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
I just asked whether that was Robin Thicke and Pharrell. No, that's Marvin Gaye. That's the real song. Not Blurred Lines, but Got to Give It Up. You know, I must admit, I was watching Marvin Gaye's daughter, Nona, weeping as the verdict was read, and she was told that the estate of Marvin Gaye would be getting nearly $7.4 million from Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams after the jury determined that they had copied Marvin Gaye's song to create Blurred Lines, their big hit from last year. She said, right now I feel free from Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke's chains. Free from Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke's chains. And what they tried to keep on us and the lies that were told. You know, why make it about that? It's a commercial dispute, and right, she's getting money that she didn't earn, her father earned.
$7 million.
$7 million. I mean, everything's not about chains, if you get my drift. You can't steal someone else's material. And, you know, we were among those early on who said, wait a second, I know that song. But the other familiar song is Hillary Clinton in a jam, this time over those admissions that she deleted 30,000 emails during her time as Secretary of State. She remains defiant, as you know, and her refusal to grant access to that private computer server that she used to send those emails, which has led to charges from the usual hard right Republican suspects, Hillary covering up. And I really mean this. The question for the rest of us is which side irks us the most, which is most disagreeable. Is it angry, defensive, chin jutting, husband covering Hillary? Pretty hard to take. Or is it Daryl Issa, Trey Gowdy, those used car salesmen, hatchet men, the architects of the IRS scandal, Fast and Furious, of course, that greatest hit, Benghazi, not to mention their colleagues in the United States Senate who wrote the love letter to the mullahs. Which one irks you? 866-RELDO, 866-437-2536, starting with Jimmy in New Jersey. Hey, Jimmy, thanks for calling, man.
Hi, how are you? One of the big things, I don't care about all Hillary's emails and things. I'm worried about national security. You know, by her not having a government email address, since she's the fourth one in the chain of the command after the president, if something happens, and we needed to use the doomsday planes, you know, to have all that high-tech communication, we might not have been able to communicate with her, and the last link could have been her email.
Well, that's fascinating, Jimmy. I don't know technically that is true. Check out the line of succession. Where does the Secretary of State? I know it's the, obviously, president, vice president, Speaker of the House of Representatives. Is it the Senate pro tem then, or is it the Secretary of State? I know the Secretary of State is in there at some point, but that is a fascinating question. If in a matter of urgent national security, a real catastrophe, A-bomb wipes out the White House and, and she's the last man standing. I don't know. I don't know that to be a fact, but Noam is checking that fascinating possibility. If it's legit. Jack in New York, what's up, Jack? What are you thinking about?
Geraldo, you're the most unbalanced person that's on radio.
Don't stall with me. I'm in a very tender place right now. I don't want to react angrily, but I'm unbalanced in what regard, Jack?
You disagree with Bibi Netanyahu on the Iranian threat.
I totally disagree with Bibi Netanyahu. And furthermore, I think Bibi Netanyahu is a big fraud. He's a fraud because he doesn't want peace with the Palestinians. He wants the situation as it exists right now in perpetuity.
You're entitled to your opinion. But the Iranian letter, could you explain to me why it was different than Nancy Pelosi going to Syria?
I don't think it was different. Someone reminded me yesterday. I didn't remember Nancy Pelosi going to Syria. I didn't like that either.
That was disgusting. I never heard you say that was disgusting.
Well, I didn't have a radio show in 2007, and then you probably weren't listening in 2007.
Right,
so don't give me that. You guys read the same talking points. Somebody pointed out that Nancy. Let me ask you this, Jack. Did you remember that Nancy Pelosi went to Syria in 2007? Was that in the front of your mind? Or did you read some talking point on Drudge or some other place? I'm going to bust Geraldo's chops. Oh, Nancy Pelosi did the same thing. Who cares what Nancy Pelosi did in 2007? For Nancy Pelosi to take the foreign policy of the United States into her own hands in 2007 when George W. Bush was president was wrong. It was wrong in 2007. It is wrong now. All you do is undermine the president of the United States. It was wrong to undermine George W. Bush in 2007, and it is wrong now. And if you're pissed off about Nancy Pelosi from 2007, then you have to be pissed off about what the Republicans are doing now, Jack. Hi, Clark.
Hi, Geraldo. Everybody's talking about this, these emails with Hillary Clinton, but nobody has mentioned way back in Whitewater, during the Whitewater fiasco. When she was working for the Rose Law Firm, she hid a bunch of files that nobody could find. They were trying to get her files. So that's her MO. That's her.
It may be, Clark, but isn't it interesting that you reached back to Whitewater, which preoccupied the first 2 years of the Clinton administration back in the 1990s?
Uh-huh.
I submit you need fresher material.
Fresher material.
Yes, because if what you're saying is she covered up Whitewater and the Rose Law Firm back in the 1980s or the late 70s?
Pretty far back.
I mean, what are you saying? That 50 years later it's relevant? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you need fresher material. You really do. It's not, think about it. Hillary rubs men wrong. Now, I don't know what that is. I mean, do you agree with me, first of all?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially our audience, yeah.
But it's not a question of our audience. It is, because our audience, I believe, contains components of all ideologies and a lot of different demographics. But I submit to you that if you were to do an absolute blind, I don't care what your politics are, your age is, or the geographical area where you hail, what do you think of Hillary Clinton as a person, as a personality? I submit to you that men would have a far more harsh view of the former First Lady, Secretary of State, Senator than women do. For instance, when I speak of Hillary with my wife, who's just 40 years old, she has a glowing kind of, it's not a naive thing. I mean, right. She knows the same kind of news as the guys do. It's just that Hillary just rubs everybody wrong. She's like everybody's worst mother-in-law kind of thing, or, you know, or wife alone. You know, I don't know what it is, and I be careful what I'm saying here, but I really do believe that there is a sexist aspect to this. If she were a man, if I were the man,
and which really reminds me difference.
Of those, the farce movies where, Austin Powers beats up the old lady. That's a man. But I think that if Hillary said the same words and had the same exact experiences and she were a man instead of a woman, there wouldn't be such harsh judgment. I'm just saying.
Well, and I wonder this, you know, as I was watching the press conference yesterday, I got bored with it after a while. Does it move the ball for anybody in the presidential race in 2016? And my guess is no. Nobody's on the fence on Hillary Clinton anymore. Nobody's been on the fence about her for years. It's hard for me to imagine there's anybody out there who, if she is the candidate, has not decided whether they'll vote for her or not. So will this, unless they find some damning email that's really damning, does it make a difference at all in terms of her aspirations to be in the White House?
They will not find any email that is damning, because if she has, if she's deleted 30,000, I would assume that, you know, one of the ones you delete is the damning one.
You would
one.
Think so, yeah.
And B, it is already March 2015. By November 2015, we'll know everybody who's running for president. Is there a Democrat that's going to surface between March and this coming November that all of a sudden is going to be, you know, a head and shoulders above Hillary Clinton as a potential candidate? You know, I don't think so. Hi, Herb. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Geraldo. Just a quick thing I was thinking about. Before the days of emails and everything, Hillary was on worked for the people who went after Nixon when he destroyed 12 minutes of tape, and that was a major thing that...
All right, the eraser, the yeah. accidental
the eraser.
Eraser
yeah. And was shredding or whatever it was. And, you know, those were also the same thing.
Rosemary Wood, Rosemary something
yes,
like that.
Rosemary
his secretary.
Wood was the secretary.
Yeah. 18 minutes, Herb, 18 minutes. But it is
sugar,
like that. Know. But Nixon, you know, the thing about Nixon, they got him because they had snitches. I mean, I haven't heard any snitch in the State Department. Herb, good historic reference. I appreciate it.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
My daughter and her pal. He's a multiple. We have two of them, and he loves to accompany my daughter when she practices piano.
Do you think he's begging her to stop, or what do you think's going on?
I think he wants to go on the road with her. All right, we're just getting word now that the Associated Press has just filed a lawsuit against the State Department to force the release of the emails and the other documents from Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. They've been trying through Freedom of Information actions to get that information even before this current scandal about the private email server. Now they say out of exhaustion and frustration with their Freedom of Information action, they have, as a last resort, taken these legal steps to gain access to these important documents, which will shed lights on actions by the State Department and former Secretary Clinton, a presumptive 2016 presidential candidate, during some of the most significant issues of our time. I still believe that this is going to take forever. It will stretch well beyond November of 2016. You know, there are so many secrecy issues that can be raised to stop it. It is going to be a frustrating time, but it will provide ammo to those who think she is overly secretive, the former Secretary of State. and presumptive 2016 presidential candidate, that she's sneaky, that she's devious, that she has some second agenda. We'll talk about it more when we come back after the news.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I think I've had enough. I might get a little drunk. I say what's on my mind. I might do a little time. 'Cause all of my kindness is taken for weakness. Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wildin', and we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm just trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, ooh, that's all I want.
Rihanna.
An optimist.
And that's Kanye West. Even though I don't want to like Kanye West, he has talent. There's no doubt about it.
How could you not like Kanye?
Because of the dopey.
Who cares about his politics, man? He's a great song. Listen to this.
All right, Paul McCartney on guitar. I got too much business. I say that Utah has decided to bring back Old West-style executions.
Oh, I saw this.
Because lethal injections have been so screwed up. And the reason I have it in my mind, doing this story about Scott Peterson that airs on March 21st on the 10th anniversary of his condemnation by lethal injection. They state the method of execution in California. They state the method, then they never carried them out. They haven't executed anyone since 2006. But so I was at the execution in Utah of Gary Gilmore, the person who was executed. He wanted to be shot. He wanted to be shot firing squad style.
So
and
who did it? Was it one guy? Or
no,
was
they have a panel of guys, and they load one gun with blank, so you don't know who did it, who actually killed him. But Gary Gilmore, and I remember I was on Good Morning America live, and I said infamously, and Norman Mailer chronicled it in his Pulitzer Prize winning book, The Executioner's Song. I said, if we're quiet, we may be able to hear the shots. And so that became the kind of beginning of the era of tabloid scrutiny. You know, it was something that everybody had done, but it was such a dramatic. There was the young Geraldo, Good Morning America, field correspondent standing outside the penitentiary in Utah on the outskirts of Salt Lake City. And I said, if you're quiet, you may have the shots. I had been there for a couple of days and had interviewed his attorney. His attorney was in favor of, he wanted to be killed, Gilmore. His attorney was in favor of yielding to his client's desire to die. Then I convinced the attorney that that was screwed up. So I turned the attorney. Then the Gilmore wouldn't talk to the attorney anymore. So I was involved in it. And then so there was a dramatic buildup. But when I said, if you're quiet, you may be able to hear the shots, that became kind of the poster statement for tabloid TV. If you're quiet, you may want to hear the shots.
You were dead on.
Because
as a viewer or listener, that's what you wanted.
That's exactly right. But just because they're hypocrites doesn't mean they can't say. All right, here's John Kerry. You got it now?
Here's Kerry before Congress. It's going to go on for a long time. I believe it will go on longer than 3 years. But I'm not troubled by the sunset provision. Certainly, but we can come back after 3 years and revisit this with
the new administration. No, that's Carter. That's the defense sector.
And I might wish for more firm language.
All right, so they're before the Senate, and what they're doing is looking for Senate support for the president's resolution to use deadly force against ISIS. The president wants a Senate declaration, not a declaration of war, but they want the Senate to give the president broad war-making power along the lines of the president's request. You know, it's everything short of large-scale commitment of American ground forces. I don't like any kind of limitations on the president's war-making power other than the advice and consent of the Congress and the opinion of the American people. But I think that his desire to get an overwhelming vote of confidence from Congress is not going to happen. You know, he's not going to be able to send an unequivocal message to ISIS that here comes the United States. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're so divided politically that we'll nitpick everything, including this, which may be why the president in a snit is withholding American air power from the Iraqi offensive to retake Tikrit, Saddam Hussein's hometown. We're hearing that Iraqi forces did enter neighborhoods in Tikrit this morning. So it looks like ISIS is getting rolled up. ISIS fighting back in the west of Tikrit in the city of Ramadi just to show they still have some spunk. But I'm telling you, once they start to collapse, that's the time to apply American air power as they flee from their dug-in positions, retreating back toward Mosul. I want Americans to grind them. I want the coalition air power to grind them into the desert sand. This is the chance now. When you have ISIS on the run, we've got to finish them off now. We've got to roll them up now. If they collapse, we've got to pursue them ruthlessly. Got to kill them. Capture if you must, but kill them. All right, back to Hillary, and I know so many of you frustrated by the secrecy. Here we go again. Hillary trying to keep her email secret. From Congress, question mark, from the Obama administration, as the Post's ace Michael Goodwin argued in the previous hour. Whatever her motive, there's no doubt but that that Hillary has kept this private email server for years, and now, you know, will we ever see those emails? I doubt it. Maybe historically, eventually, years from now. But not in time to make any difference for November 2016, other than the fact that the issue will still be alive then, unless it's been supplanted by some other scandal du jour. But they have to subpoena that server. They've got to get that subpoena through the committee. They'll do that. They control the committee. The House Republicans do. Daryl Issa, Trey Gowdy, etc. But then they've got to go to the full Senate. The Republicans control the Senate. They'll get it through the Senate. But then they've got to go to the Justice Department for implementation of whatever it is they decide. And the Justice Department under Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch is his successor, soon to be confirmed, we expect, will drag their feet or be half-hearted in their presentation because they're Democrats. So I don't think you're going to get anything until and unless you get a Republican in the White House. And that can't be until January 2017. So, you know, who knows where the hell the rest of us will be. So what do you think of Hillary? What do you think of bad politics in this country? What do you think about ISIS? What do you think? Alan in New Jersey. Thanks for calling 866-RELLO. What's on your mind, Alan?
GR, you know how much I love you. I was your first vote for Senate. But I want you to hone in on one thing.
Sure.
We have John Kerry negotiating this deal with the mullahs to give the future prospects that these fanatics have nuclear weapons, okay? That's our fear. They say nuclear energy. Now, I just want to rewind and remind you that the same John Kerry, one of his biggest decisions after deciding to run for president, vetted John Edwards as his running mate. Now, here are the things, just a reminder, that John Kerry did not see at the time. Again, this was the biggest decision of his life. That this man who had a dying wife was fathering a baby with someone in the entourage. That
you're talking about John Edwards. I'm not sure. Did his affair start before he was selected to be vice president?
No. But we're not going to be distracted by when or what. These are the things that.
So what's your point, Alan? That John Kerry has no judgment.
Do you want John Kerry negotiating for the future of Seoul and who's your daughter and Jacob? What's the rush?
That's your understand. Son?
John Kerry has shown himself not to be qualified to vet even his vice president candidate. I don't want him deciding what kind of salad dressings on my salad.
All right, Alan, who would you pick? All right, I got you. Who would you pick?
And let me say just
who would
one
you
more
pick?
Thing,
who would
brother.
You pick? Put up or shut up. Who would you pick? Who would you one rather have than John Kerry as Secretary of State right now?
You you and Donald Trump, baby. That's who I want.
All right, you got me now. You got my attention now.
Let me say one thing, and you're not. Let me say one thing.
Go ahead.
Your comments on Bibi, and I love you, they're not good for the Jews.
You think it's my comments that are not good for the Jews, or is it Bibi that's not good
for
the Jews?
You're concentrating on the China and the place setting instead of what we just talked about, which is the entree, baby. The entree is what is important.
Well, my role in life is to be good for the Jews, so you hurt me.
Then be good for the Jews, like your mother said, and like we want you to be, my brother.
All right,
we
buddy.
Love you out here.
I love
here.
You, too. That's reason, why this you're going to make a shit up between Jacob and Saul. I can see it now.
God bless you,
God
bro.
Bless
God
you.
Bless you.
All right, thank you, brother.
I was going to say that argument doesn't really hold up because if you look at Israeli politics, it's split right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
Half the people hate him.
Half the people hate him. And what about this guy Herzog? Do you know anything about him?
Isaac Herzog, it's an interesting guy. He was educated here. So he went to a yeshiva on the Upper East Side for a couple years. He went to Cornell and NYU, if I'm not mistaken. And then has been in Israeli politics for years.
But how come I haven't heard any of his speeches?
You know, he hasn't been one of these guys who's out in front like Bibi Netanyahu. He has sort of a high-pitched voice. So
did
people,
Abe Lincoln. Yeah, that was before TV.
Yeah, and so some people are bothered by that. But if you look at the latest polling, he's surging right at the right moment.
Is he a veteran?
I think everybody's a veteran.
I think so, too. I'm sure he is.
I don't know what.
But. I mean, Bibi's used that to great advantage. I mean, the fact that he was wounded in 73.
Yeah, but it's mandatory for everybody. So.
It is mandatory service, yeah. I wish I knew a little bit more about him. Let's see if we can find any of his public speeches. I'd like to hear what he has to say. If he is surging now and Bibi fading, particularly, I would expect, as the Israeli populace gets the feedback now. The feedback is a lot more negative a week after Bibi's speech than it was in the glow of the day or two after, where everyone's saying a great rhetoric, a wonderful speech. Now people are starting to say, wait, what was the impact of that speech? And haven't we, the Democrats really digging in against him? I mean, clearly many more Democrats have jumped against Bibi now post-speech than were willing to do so in the build up to the speech. So it will be interesting to see what the feedback is. Tom Friedman has an interesting column about Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas billionaire. I tell you, the guy that once showed me $1 million in cash, the guy who built the Venetian and, a billionaire gambling guy. He is so powerful. He created this free newspaper in Israel, just to back Bibi and to bash the left-wing liberal side of the Israeli electorate. And he seems to have such disproportionate power. And Tom Friedman, I think that everybody agrees, a real centrist guy, not only a Midwestern Jew, but, a key columnist, maybe the world's most influential columnist, and very fair and pro-American. He's got an interesting take on it. I know that he's more liberal than many of you all listening right now, but if you catch show, just look up on the internet, the Tom Friedman column today about how Sheldon Adelson's involvement is distorting Israeli and American Jewish politics. Very fascinating.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
26 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back, 866 Geraldo. I shall get to your calls momentarily. We mentioned just before the break the aftermath of Bibi's speech. I opined that I thought that support for the Israeli prime minister diminished after the speech. I'm looking at a Gallup survey right now, and it was exactly as I thought it would be, in the sense that his speech has divided the United States' support for Israel in a way that is lamentable, I think. More Democrats now view the prime minister unfavorably. It is 46% now see Netanyahu negatively. That's up 14% from the last month before the speech. So his negative went from 32 to 46 among Democrats. Among Republicans, though, 62% hold Netanyahu in a favorable light. So the nation is divided. I wonder, what about Israel? Did you check?
Yeah, so this is the poll of polls, all polls culled together. And the Zionist Union, which is Bibi Netanyahu's biggest opponent in this race, Isaac Herzog, the leader of that party, they have 24 seats if the election were to be held today to Likud's 21 seats. Now, you know, in Israel, you don't directly vote for prime minister. You vote for the party, and then they have to create a coalition after the election. That three-seat lead is probably not enough for the Zionist Union to form a coalition, and Bibi Netanyahu would probably still win.
How much would they have to have?
You know, the thought is they need to have a fair amount of seats higher because religious parties, which yield so much power, more than likely go more often than not with the right-wing parties and make a coalition.
And then Netanyahu is reaching out to them.
Always has been.
Particularly because they're the hardest liners and they are also the settlers in the West Bank and the occupied territories. And Netanyahu just made an unannounced visit to a rally north of Tel Aviv. This was yesterday. And he said that Herzog, the guy you're mentioning, the head of the Zionist Union, would seek to renew peace talks with Palestinians and negotiate about dividing Jerusalem, giving back territory, which is exactly why I like Herzog. You've got to give something up. You can't keep those territories anymore. 50 years. It's coming up on the 50th anniversary. Ladies and gentlemen, imagine the ink that it's going to be when it's the 50th anniversary. It's just enough already. You've got to negotiate. All right, enough about Israel. Back to the United States of America. Back to Hillary Clinton. Back to the flap that kind of the opening salvo of the presidential race. Who can defeat Hillary? Maybe Hillary can defeat Hillary. We'll start with Steve in the Bronx. What's on your mind, buddy? Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm a big fan since the Willowbrook days.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And, you know, years ago I read a book called America A to Z, and it goes through all the bureaucracies in the United States and their staffs. It's so obnoxious by the time you get to the letter C, you can't read on. Now I want to fast forward to today. You know, as you try to look at the infrastructure of our country, my opinion is that from the top, the politicians, the corruptness, the greed, and the lack of accountability is what's going to break down the fabric. When you go to the middle level, I think you find the media, irresponsible media, that puts a slant on things. You know, you got left and right wing, but you got some that are so off, so choosy about what they're going to tell the masses out there, and they feed what they want to feed to create what they want to create. And then on the bottom, you have the attorneys.
I have to leave it at the attorneys, Steve. I'm out of time.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back. 37 minutes after 11 here on 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. Pleasant morning in New York. The clouds have come in. Sun still sneaks through now and again. But this pre-spring weather is banishing the gloom of winter. I'm very happy about that. Optimism should return, the whole notion that we've survived another cruel season. And the nagging question I asked Noam in the first hour, why don't we all live in Florida? But that's another issue. But I'm telling you, if you don't live in Manhattan, you just are missing one of the true wonders of the world. These snert is really, I'm sorry, but this is something you really, it's this year is one of the worst I've ever seen. I don't know why, but you know, nobody picks up the dog crap when there's snow on the ground. So you have all that. You've got all the candy wrappers. You have all the generalized urban gunk. They're just a gross reminder of what life is like when there's no snow to collect it all, but gross. But it's cleaning up, melting. We'll sweep, and the spring will be here, and the ladies will take their coats off. We'll all be happy. A couple of notes. The Dow, thankfully, recovering somewhat. Last I checked, it was up around 60 after the devastating blow yesterday, 56, 57. The devastating losses yesterday and the day before yesterday. Just the Dow really, heading toward correction. 10% down. I don't want it to go there. So I'm glad that things are going back up. The other thing I want to mention, and I haven't mentioned it, is the Boston Marathon bombing. You know, they're going for the death penalty. The guy admits that he was part of this conspiracy with his big brother, who's dead, to blow up the Boston Marathon, a despicable act of murder. They killed three. They grievously wounded so many others. But I just can't get behind the death penalty for the kid. I know my family dynamic. And I know that, you know, particularly with all of this Islamic mumbo-jumbo stuff that's so current, and particularly where these guys hail from, you know, the Georgian republics there, the Muslim republics of the former Soviet Union. I think that the kid was dragged into it. Maybe he embraced jihad enthusiastically or not. What point is it now for Massachusetts, which doesn't get around to killing them, like California anyways, a bunch of BS anyway. Why go through the whole gut-wrenching process of condemning him to die? They're not going to kill him anyway. I just think put him six stories underground.
Which is like being 6 feet underground.
It's worse than being. Yeah. I mean, if he wants to meet his 27 virgins or whatever it is, he's not going to meet them six stories underground in the Supermax Colorado Federal Prison. Let him just rot there. Let him spend 50 years there contemplating, the job he did for Allah. All right, what's on your mind? Dino, thank you, Dino, for holding on. What's thinking?
Ronald, how you doing?
Good,
all right,
man, good. Thank you.
All right. Listen, like I was saying before, first of all, I love you. You know, I've been listening to you for years.
Appreciate it.
I remember back when you did your $5 heroin hotel thing.
How about that? That's a good memory.
Yeah, I got a good memory years ago. And, yesterday you said we want to get the wool pulled over our eyes. I mean, we're fooling ourselves with the Bibi speech. And listen, I'm not Jewish. I have no affiliation with Israel. But I think you're pulling the wool over your own eye. Your own personal politics are getting involved in this. I mean, you heard the speech. Did you watch the speech?
Yeah, I watched it. And of course my personal politics are getting involved.
And if you saw it, both Republicans and Democrats were giving them standing ovations.
There weren't too many Democrats. And if you see the surveys, I read the surveys, you know, the numbers don't lie. It was Gallup. And the 46% of Democrats have an unfavorable impression of the guy now.
Geraldo, if you watched the speech, they were both even continuing.
Man, I didn't like this. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I don't like it. But, you know, I love you, man. I love you, but I didn't like the speech. I don't like when people use racism. I don't like when people use anti-Semitism. I detest when people invoke the Holocaust, unless it is about the generalized mass massacre of a people for their religious beliefs or their tribal affiliation, whatever it is. To use the Holocaust to drag in Elie Wiesel, what the hell does he have to do with anything? You know, I just think that it was a campaign speech that totally conned whoever. Anyway, Barry in Pennsylvania. Thanks, Barry. What's up?
Hey, Geraldo. Listen, I want to make a prediction for 2016.
Go ahead.
You're going to vote, you're going to endorse the Republican nominee, and then you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, why do you think I would endorse the Republican and vote for
a Republican?
You know, I didn't vote for, I even forgot who it was now, Mitt Romney. I didn't think that Mitt Romney was better than Barack Obama. Plus, as long as the Republicans, that's truth in lending here, or truth in voting. As long as you're against gay marriage, as long as you're against immigration reform, as long as you're against the woman's right to choose, what else? One more. You can't, oh, gay rights. Did I mention gay rights? You can't have a political party marijuana. You can't have a political party that has positions that affect my life or are anathema to what I believe in personal freedoms. I think Rand Paul is probably the best candidate in that regard. And I think Jeb Bush will also be very good. I think I could vote for Jeb Bush over Hillary Clinton, and I don't know and could not tell you right at this moment which one I would vote for, because I think their politics are very similar. It's a question of who would run the government better. And then there's the historic thing, the chance to vote for the first female to hold office. You know, that played a big role in the vote for Barack Obama in 2009. But would that be enough to trump the fact that Jeb Bush did such a good job as governor of Florida? I don't think he generated any controversies. I like his ideas on education. I like standardized testing. I mean, your kids are young enough. What do you think about standardized testing?
You know, they're just about to take them, actually, this week or next week.
So are they under extreme pressure?
You know, now the New Jersey, the state assembly is about to pass this bill that the first couple years won't count because these tests are all being done on the computer now, not handwritten like they used to be. So do they feel the pressure? Yeah, because they teach to the test. These teachers definitely teach to the test. They spend a lot of time doing that.
But I get that whole teach to the test idea. I mean, in law school, when you graduate law school, then you've got to go take the bar review course because the bar review course, unlike law school, teaches to the bar exam.
Right.
So you take it and the questions you read in the bar review course are the same questions you get in the bar exam. I mean, you're clearly prepared because it's like a vocational training. They're teaching you how to pass the test. So the danger, I guess, is that all of elementary school and middle school and high school will become teaching to the test rather than getting an education. I get that, except for how long have we had schools with no standards where they just pass kids social promotions? A kid ages out, they bump them up to the next grade. He or she is not prepared for the next grade. They flunk out, they drop out, one thing or another. I think standardized testing has a definite role. I don't know whether it should be weighted in some way, so, you know, you can factor in, you know, rich kids have tutors and poor kids don't, and that kind of...
Do you think a teacher's evaluation should be based on how those exams... That's part of the problem, is they're saying...
I think teachers' evaluations are too often self-serving. That they want the teacher who gives the... whose students show the most progress is the teacher who gets the raise or the bonus or the attention. You know, so it is in the teacher's interest to make the children look smarter and more high-functioning than maybe they really are. That's what standardized testing was designed to fight against. Therefore, I think it has a role. I really do think it has a role. And I, when I look at conservatives who favored standardized testing, I don't know how I get off on this, but I'm in favor of Jeb Bush. That's how I get off on it, who is an advocate of standardized testing. They favored standardized testing because of what I talked about, selective promotion. They were thinking, the conservatives who supported standardized testing, is, it's all about the inner city. Then when the suburbs started getting, their kids started getting hit with standardized testing and sub-performing, then all of a sudden it was an issue of freedom of education and liberate the educators from the tyranny of the standardized test, blah, blah, blah. So it's BS. I think there's a role for standardized testing, and it shouldn't be the be-all and end-all, as the SAT score became and the LSAT scores became. But I trust the standardized test more than I trust the teacher's judgment, to answer your bottom line, at least from this father of, like, my kids. I look at my daughter. I don't want to brag on Simone, my dean's lister. She graduated from school here in New York, did all those standardized tests. She is kicking butt at Northwestern, a high-functioning school in Chicago, proud to say. And I just love her. I want to post on my social media all her report cards.
Put a great point average up there. Yeah.
How obnoxious is that, ladies and gentlemen?
No, it's nice.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
5 minutes before high noon. Last chance, 866 Geraldo. We'll start with Frank in Long Island. What's up, Frank?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. Earlier in the show, you characterized Trent Gowdy as a used car salesman.
Trey Gowdy, yeah,
I'm sorry. And
I actually like Trey Gowdy. I didn't mean to...
Do you know of a better interrogator in any legal...
He's a pretty good former prosecutor. He's a DA, and unlike Daryl Issa, who really gives me that used car salesman vibe, I don't, and you're right to correct me, Frank, and I stand corrected. Trey Gowdy is, there's more to him, but that's why I hate to see him being led down the partisan path where he's going to become a hitman and people are going to think of him like a hitman rather than as a thoughtful legislator. But he is an excellent interrogator. You're right there.
No, there's nothing be bad about being both.
I agree. You know, and you busted me righteously, and I stand corrected. Thank you.
Right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut him off after I complimented him. Marty on Staten Island. What's up, Marty?
Hey, Mr. Rhino. How you doing?
Hey, all right, all right. What's
hey,
up?
Listen, you took complaining about...
You hear the rhinos are getting extinct in Africa.
You complained about Adelson before, okay?
Adelson, yeah.
So much Netanyahu. What about the other guys who were given to Herzog, like Abraham, the founder of Slimfest? He's personally funding, okay, Herzog.
Is that true? I don't know that to be true.
Check it out with the V15 group, Ace. You'll see.
All right, I'll look it up right now. And what is it, the B-15?
What? V-15.
V-15.
Group. You got it.
All right, okay? I'll check it out.
This guy's worth billions, and he's funding them. And then you got Lenders Bagels. They're supporting Herzog. You got all sorts of people.
They still make Lenders Bagels?
They make Lenders Bagels?
They support the New York Times and the guy who writes on...
Oh, well, let me ask you this, Marty. Do you think that someone should be able to spend hundreds of millions to influence elections?
Yeah, why not? It's their money. Let them pass a law say they can't.
Well, they passed the law that said they can.
They
I mean,
could.
The Supreme
well,
Court ruled in
law,
Citizens
so
United
there.
That you can give
you
anything
question.
You want.
There's
and I think
law for abortion. Are you for or against abortion, Ace?
Am I for or against it? I'm for a woman's right to choose.
Ah, the sneaky way out of it. The
What's
way
that?
Out
I'm,
of
for,
it again.
I'm for the woman's right to choose. That's not sneaky.
You're fooling nobody, Geraldo.
Marty. Marty, what are we going to do now, Marty? All right, it's been a great day.